And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 687. We're here to recap the week 25 Fab, coming at you a couple days later. Had some technical difficulties and scheduling difficulties that took place along the way. So we'll recap some Fab. We'll talk some more too early meatball draft champions as well. But in order to help me do that, we got a little change of pace this week. Mr. Ben Tidd was on vacation, living life, which is fine. But I got a friend coming on the show. I'm already recording with him three times a week as it is. Might as well record a little more while we're at it. You can find his work over at Fantasy Pros. He does the 90 Feet From Home podcast. He has a Patreon called 90 Feet From Home as well. And you can find him on Twitter at JoeArico99. My buddy, Joe Arico, how are we doing, my friend?
Yeah, it's great to fill in for my old colleague, Ben, and sit in with you because, you know what, we're barely chatting these days, so it's good to catch up. Now, of course, if people aren't checking it out, they should be in those Fantasy Pros live streams, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 12:30 Eastern. Get to see some more Joe and Bubba. If you aren't sick of us already, then you can check out even more of us.
Yep. It's been a lot of fun, my friend. But before we get going on this too early discussion and whatnot, I want you to let me know what you got going on. Another Patreon. The season's winding down, but you started that kind of mid-year, give or take, and you've built it pretty big already. So let me know what you got going on.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It was a transitional year for me going over to Fantasy Pros over in May. So my work on the podcast side is partly over there. Like I mentioned, Bob and I are doing Leading Off. I'm doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes over there. If you're listening to any of the football shows or the betting shows, there's a decent chance I was doing something behind the scenes for it anyway. So that's been a lot of what I've been doing. I've also got my solo show, 90 Feet From Home, which goes at you 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. We're still going throughout the off season, even into September here. We're doing 5 days a week if you guys are looking for more daily recap type of stuff, similarly to what you'll hear on Leading Off. And then, yeah, the Patreon side, we are winding down. I've been pretty busy with Fantasy Pro stuff, so the writing has kind of tailed off a little bit over the past couple weeks, but still going to be doing rankings and stuff coming at you early in the off season. So check everything out over on the Twitter at JoeArico99. That's where everything gets shared out from. But Bubba, really looking forward to this because I've been hosting a lot of our stuff recently. So I just get to sit back and relax and let you do all the hosting and stuff today.
Yep, you get to sit back, relax, have some fun. And what I was kind of looking forward to here is I've already recapped the too early meatball draft with Ryan Bloomfield on Bubba and the Bloom because he's in the draft with me. And then I've had Ben talk about it a bit because he was chomping at the bit right after it got done. That was fun. But now that the kind of dust has settled for a couple of weeks and discussions kind of slowed down and maybe we've seen some more things take place via injuries or production or whatever, and that's what will happen with this early, 11-round ADP, I kind of want to get another person's opinions on what was going on, like what went through their head when they see, wow, this pick or this or whatever, kind of different thoughts going through it. Because us as drafters, when we're doing this draft, we have no ADP. There's nothing. We make our own list kind of off the whim type stuff. It's a really interesting situation. So I want to get Joe's kind of idea of what we got going here. For those that are still new to this, Draft Champions is a 50-round draft and hold format for NFBC. It's 15 teams. We drafted the first 11 rounds. There's no fab throughout the season. But I just wanted to get Joe's thoughts on this. We're going to go round by round. If anything stands out, Joe is going to point it out. We'll have a little discussion on this. But we'll start with this, Joe. Here's round one for you. And you have this picture at your leisure as well. But Shohei Ohtani went one, then Bobby Witt, Aaron Judge, Gunnar Henderson, fourth, Juan Soto, five, J-Ram, six, Ellie De La Cruz, seven, Kyle Tucker, I took eight, and I've already had regrets on that. Paul Skeens, nine, Mookie Betts, 10, Ronald Acuna jumped up to 11, Scooble, 12, J-Rod, 13, Tatis, 14, and Lindor, 15. If I didn't want to hear his name already, but there he is. Anything stand out to you in the first round? Because there's a lot of guys are worthy of first-round picks, but what stands out to you there?
It's all fairly chalky compared to what I was expecting. Like a month or so ago, I kind of did an exercise where I just wrote down my top 15, and it's a lot of the same names. I was on the FTN show last week, and we did the same kind of exercise talking about the first 15. I think there are probably about 17 or 18 names that could be in this bunch, but this is about what I was expecting in terms of the actual names. In terms of the order, I feel like Gunnar Henderson might be a little bit early at four. I don't know if I'd want to take him over Soto, over J-Ram, over Ellie De La Cruz. He hasn't been as exceptional in the second half, and I feel like I probably would want to prioritize one of those other guys. Again, I'm kind of picking nits here in the first round. I think Gunnar's probably like where I'd have a maybe seven or so. That's kind of the only real thing, though. Like everything else kind of makes sense. Acuna going at 11 could be the best pick of the draft. And if he ends up coming back and starting the season without having to miss much time or any time, then he's probably going to be a great value at pick 11. Julio is a little bit interesting at 13. You could make the argument that some of these other guys who maybe slipped into the second round or were pushed later into the first, the last couple picks could have gone ahead of him. But we know that he is a potential 40-40 guy. So I don't have a really big problem with it. I don't have much of a problem with anything that took place in the first round. If there's anything that is surprising, I think Gunner may be a touch early, but who am I to argue with James Anderson?
Yep. That's kind of the way I looked at it. We're talking prospects, young players. I think James has the okay on that one. And it's interesting because when Ryan and I did the preview show, I was thinking, I could see Gunner being a top five pick. People see the potential to maybe take another step forward. We'll see. Went fourth. Like, I wouldn't do it, but I totally get it. Like you said, I'll preface this like I prefaced every other review of this thing. I'm not against pretty much any of these picks because it is so wild, but it's just kind of our thoughts on it. And the first round is wild because one thing you said is I think there are about 20 players that are viable first round picks. And that's why already looking at this, and a lot can change come February or something, I want to back into the first round pick unless I'm getting like Shohei at one. Like, that's just kind of how I feel about it because you can get two absolute studs on the back end of this draft. So I'm going to read off round two and get your thoughts now. Then I have some other questions combining rounds two and one for you. But coming back on round two here, you got Vladito at pick 15 or pick one of round two. And then went Yordan Alvarez, Corbin Carroll went number three. So you have a J-Rod Carroll combo. Corey Seager, Jaren Duran, Rafael Devers, Freddie Freeman. I went with Zach Wheeler with the seventh pick. Bryce Harper, Trey Turner, Corbin Burns, Austin Riley, CJ Abrams, George Kirby. And with the final pick of round two went, can't even read all of a sudden, Ketel Marte, your buddy that went deep today. What are you liking in round two here? What stands out to you, I should say, in round two?
Overall, I think I'm a little bit surprised at the pitchers who went in round two a little bit. Wheeler, I think that he is really reliable, but there is eventually going to come a point where he is going to miss a significant amount of time. And I know this is your pick, Bubba, and I'm not trying to hate
That's fine. That's
but
fine.
As he gets older, he's now 34, every season 200-ish innings. I just worry that there is going to eventually be something that takes him down as he gets older. So I would worry about him as an SP1. That's more conjecture, though. There's nothing really to suggest he's going to get hurt. It's just it feels like everybody is just eventually a ticking time bomb if they're throwing these days. So I do worry a little bit there. In terms of Corbin Burns, I just don't know if I view him in that positive a light. Like, I still think he's a great pitcher, but should he be going off the board as the fourth SP, it feels maybe a touch early. And then George Kirby, like we were talking about him earlier today on Leading Off, Bubba, he's probably not in that SP1 conversation anymore. He's probably more of an SP2. So as the fifth overall starter, when you're leaving other guys who generate a lot more strikeouts, who have better offenses behind them, I don't know that I really would have agreed with that one. Like, I think that some of the pitchers who went in round three, like DeGrom I'll leave round three for now, but I think that there's probably some guys who took some pitchers a little bit earlier than I would have expected. Like, these are the type of trends I would expect to see later in draft season. At this point of the year, I would have expected a lot more teams to go double hitter as opposed to taking a pitcher in the second. And the guys that went did surprise me, as I said.
Yeah, I'll preface my pick is last year I took four hitters, and then I went Yuri Perez, Max Scherzer, and Adbert Alzolay. So I wanted to make sure I got a quote-unquote number one on this one. But I get your sentiments, but I didn't want to be stuck with Burns. I've never been a Kirby guy. Now, Fish, on the other hand, he went Kirby. And I'm just going to give some picks. We'll go back to round three. Devin Williams, Framber Valdez, Aaron Nola, Michael King. That's his next five picks.
Yeah.
Fish isn't going to hit the innings limit this year because of injuries to pitchers. He didn't draft that many of them. So he went very aggressive. Like, Kirby, good or bad, eats up innings. Framber Valdez eats up innings. Aaron Nola eats up innings. So that's where Fish was on that one, which is a very intriguing option as well. But I agree, it's weird. And as this draft goes on, like rounds three and four, littered with pitchers. Like, heck, rounds three through seven, littered with pitchers. So there's a lot of options to go through there. Now, what I want to ask you is, in round two here, maybe it's in the first part of round two, maybe it's dragging on, which of these players would you expect move into round one come draft season, like, say, February, March?
I think there's a chance that even going outside of this, like DeGrom could potentially be one of those guys. If we see a couple of old DeGrom type of starts, he could be, you know, even as high as a top five pick potentially. Corbin Carroll has done a lot over the last month plus to get himself back into the first round. So he's probably going to get back in there in some cases. Those are the ones that really stand out. I think Trey Turner probably, just based on what he's done and in that lineup, probably should be a first rounder, but it's just such a deep pool, like we've both alluded to, that there's not really room for him anymore, but he's close to a 300 hitter. You know, he steals bases, he has power, but he's probably going to be a mid-second round pick still. So I think the main ones that could potentially jump up really to me are DeGrom, and then Carroll's probably going to get back in there as well.
All righty. No, I expect Carroll for sure to get a splurge with the way he's finished this year, and DeGrom is interesting. Round three, we got leading off round three of pick one, Emmanuel Clase, Devin Williams. We saw our first couple of closers go. Then Logan Gilbert, William Contreras, as James Anderson continued to make me so happy in this draft. Edwin Diaz, Jackson Churio, Jacob DeGrom. I took Royce Lewis in round three. Felix Bautista, Chris Sale, Dylan Cease at pick 12. We have O'Neill Cruz, Josh Hader, Blake Snell, and rounding out the third round, one James Wood, my friend. So what are your thoughts here when you see round three?
It's generally what you would kind of expect. Mostly pitchers, you start to see the closers going. There's nothing really surprising, honestly. Wood and Churio making their way up there would be the headline news of those two young guys getting up into the third round. I don't know that I would take Churio over Wood. That might be one thing where I would maybe reverse them. There was a 9-pick difference between them, but I feel like Wood might be a safer prospect overall. That's kind of a small thing though, really. Royce Lewis in the third. I think that the potential is there for him as a first rounder. Like we could get him as a first rounder. It just comes with a lot of risk. That's the only thing. And I don't know. Like what do we know in terms of risk anymore? So it could be a fantastic pick, but it also does worry me a little bit. Taking Royce Lewis there. I'm not trying to pick on you, I swear, Bubba.
No, it's a great point. I was gonna bring it up anyway. So keep going. I'll come back to Royce here in a minute.
That's kind of it. Felix Bautista going in the third round. Taking a chance. Definitely taking a chance there. Ryan Roof, though, he is a closer guy. He covers closers for RotoWire, so he definitely knows relievers better than most. But it is definitely taking a chance. Like, is he somebody that I would prefer to have over Josh Hader, Rizal Iglesias, Ryan Helsley as of today? Probably not. What do you think about that pick, though?
It's interesting. Like, I'm probably not there either, but he is at least throwing bullpens right now. He should be back to normal to start the season. They do need a closer. I don't think Sir Anthony Dominguez has started the year for them. And it's also kind of a funny situation because Ryan Roof took him in round second or third round last year and obviously lost him. So I think Roof's going back to the well going, okay, I'm getting my guy. I think it did surprise us, but this is what happens when you have this, you don't really have an ADP to go off of. There's a lot of picks that you go that'll surprise you, and then you're just like, oh, wait, okay, yeah, that's interesting. I could see that. Like, if Bautista comes back this spring and you see like three good outings where he's pumping, you know, high 90s, he's probably going back in the third or fourth round again. So that's why it's just a interesting situation, I guess.
Yeah, I just think that is. There's a lot of risk early closers to begin with. It's a strategy that, I mean, I guess I was kind of burned this year. Whenever I went early closer, it was Devin Williams, and you can kind of figure that out. So maybe it's the whole score and lover thing of not wanting to go back to what hurts you. But I feel like I just generally like to take the closers that fall a little bit more. Being the aggressor and taking the first closer, the second, third closer there, you run the risk of missing out on a huge run if you don't take one there. But I also feel like you just overpay. And Bautista could be, again, he could be a great pick if he does come back and look like old Felix Bautista, but you just never know if that command's going to be there. I don't even know if he's that much, like, I know coming off of surgery, people are generally not such an injury risk, generally speaking, but we haven't seen Felix Bautista throw the baseball in a while, but he is such a violent delivery. He feels like somebody who could just be injury prone. Like, I and if you pull up a YouTube video of his delivery, you'll know what I mean. He just, like, it looks like he hates the baseball and he just wants to get it the hell out of his hand as fast as possible. And that's what he does. But I don't really feel safe about that pick on whatever it is, September 11th today. I just don't feel safe about it.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And closers did go early. We'll talk about that. Between rounds three and four, a slew of them went off the board. Now, to comment on your Royce Lewis discussion point there, I 100% agree. I did not think he'd fall to round three. I know Dom, the bullpen guru, he did a preview show with Rob DiPietro, who helps run this thing, and he predicted Royce Lewis to be a first-round pick. So he fell to the third round. He's much more of a draft and hold type pick for me when it comes to Royce, because I backed him up with Bregman later. I could get extra third basemen, basically. We're in a Fab league. If Royce is your only third baseman and then he gets hurt, now you're at the mercy of Fab, and that can be difficult. So it's a draft strategy for me when drafting Royce Lewis, but it's the type of thing is in this format, if he can play 100 games and still give me 25 to 30 homers and do what he can do, and that's still a big if. I don't think we've seen 100 games yet, so it's going to say that. But you pair that up with whatever replacement value you get off your roster, that could be pretty, pretty nice. So that's my Royce Lewis strategy. One I don't know if I would really go with, say, in a Fab league, per se.
If you look at what he's done, because, I mean, recently he has been a little bit cold, and I know some people are going to probably bring that up. But if you look at the product as a whole, which is 135 games, which is, this day and age, generally speaking, about a full season for a lot of players, it's 33 homers, 6 steals, a .277 batting average, a .138 WRC+, 11% barrel rate. There's a great player here. It's just all a matter about staying on the field. There's no zero question about the talent, because I know that things have been a little bit rough recently. I've gotten some like sit start questions about him, but the talent is unquestioned. That's for sure. And the lineup has actually been a lot better than I expected around him in Minnesota this year. So, you know, to Dom's point, he could end up as a first round value, but I don't see him actually being taken in the first round anywhere. It's just such a deep top 20 or so. I couldn't see myself doing that.
Yeah, the talent pool is pretty wild this year, and it gets better and better each year. I think a lot of it's maybe due to platooning more. I don't know, but there is definitely something going on there to make this interesting. Let's look at round four now. And like I said, we saw Class A, Williams, Edwin Diaz, Bautista, Hader. So five relievers, closers, going round three. Here's what round four brought you. Raisel Iglesias kicked off round four. Then Michael Harris, who had a kind of a drop from fate, round two pick last year, on round four. You got Pete Alonso with the third pick. Jackson Merrill went the fourth pick in round four. So you have Churio and Wood in round three, Merrill in round four. So that's pretty fun, all things considered. Now you got Helsley, another closer. Johan Duran, Tyler Glasnow, Mason Miller, Joe Ryan, Matty Olson, who's fallen to late fourth round. Jazz Chisholm, that was kind of a surprise. And then we sat back and we're like, yeah, okay, that could be interesting, because he could be third base eligible come next year. That's another thing that you don't have off the top of the head there. And then you had Robert Suarez, which James Anderson, there is some funny quotes from him in the draft. And then going on a little farther there, you got Marcelo Zuna to Ryan Bloomfield, Framber Valdez, and Pablo Lopez round out round four. So a lot of pitching, a lot of closers in this situation. So what are your thoughts on round four?
The main thing that stood out to me was Michael Harris still being taken as high up as he was, still going as a top 50 overall pick. What has he done to deserve that? I mean, I know that he's dealt with injuries, but it's a couple of years running now where Michael Harris has been a little bit disappointing, not quite lived up to what we thought. And honestly, it's a big enough sample size this year, 93 games. He's a .245 batting average, 11 homers, 8 stolen bases. The team around him has been pretty bad offensively. I've heard them referred to recently as the National League Mariners, and it's not too far off as of late. But Michael Harris has an 82 WRC plus as a fourth round pick. I can't really get behind it. The main one there, like Jazz Chisholm, I would happily take Jazz Chisholm over Michael Harris, especially as a Yankee, especially if Soto resigns it with the Yankees. And of course, there's a lot of unknowns right now, but Jazz Chisholm has been a top 50 player this season. He's 22 homers, 35 steals. The batting average has been good. He stayed healthy. Do you see any reason why Michael Harris should be going this early, and especially ahead of Merrill and ahead of Chisholm in particular?
I would not be. I think some people, though, they're looking for the bounce back second round pick last year. We saw a good batting average in the past, injured a lot this year. I think people are taking the, you know, what could be situation with Michael Harris. But I'm with you. It's not for me. Like he's a 2020 guy that maybe someday kicks off a 30-30 season. I don't know, but I'm not on the Michael Harris this early train. I'd rather have Jackson Merrill. I was hoping he'd fall to me this round. That did not happen. Like when you talk Michael Harris, there's a lot of guys that come up later, and there's like outfield's really deep late. That there's a lot of guys to take up Michael Harris.
Yeah, there wasn't really a lot of outfielders that have been taken to this point in the draft. At this point, he's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He's like the 11th outfielder taken. It's just too early. Like, it is just too early, especially if people are going pitcher early and pitcher whatever else early and pushing them down the board. Like, I'm looking at, we're going to get to it. There's some really, really nice outfield values that I'm seeing on the board here. There's a lot of values in general. I'm excited because I've kind of been poo-pooing a lot of these picks, but there's going to be some values coming up. I don't want everybody in this draft to hate me after this. There's a lot of great picks here, but Michael Harris, I just can't get behind that one.
Yep. It'll be interesting to see how it pans out. It's the fun of all this. Round five, we get another catcher off the board here and Adley Rutschman to lead off round five. And then you got Aaron Nola with the second pick in round five. Andres Munoz, Zach Neto with the fourth pick in round five. That one has stood out to many of us over this period of time. Ozzie Albies, Yamamoto. We talked about him recently. He went with the sixth pick in round five. Logan Ohapi, Willie Adames, Bailey Ober, Cole Reagans, Jose Altuve, Lou Bob, Garrett Cole, Grayson Rodriguez, and Yainer Diaz wraps up round five. So starting to mix things up on these rosters here. A couple guys moving up in the ADP. So what's your thoughts on round five?
Jose Altuve feels like an amazing value in the fifth round. I know he's getting older, but there haven't really been many signs of decline with him. Like, I'm seeing a three-round difference between Ketel Marte and Jose Altuve. I just don't understand it. Like, I'm going to have Altuve ranked ahead of Marte next season, personally. I know that Welsh is probably, if he's going to hear that, he's probably not going to like that, but that's probably where I'm at. Altuve is the biggest steal in this round for me. Rutschman has been quietly awful in the second half, so I worry a little bit about him there, but overall, I think it's probably a pretty solid pick. He is going to get a lot of at-bats, a lot of plate appearances, so I don't really worry there. This is somebody that you like quite a bit, and I'm not a fan of this pick. I wonder what you think, though. Logan Ohapi in the fifth feels pretty early. He's been dreadful. Like, recently, over the last month, he's batting like .138, .132. .238 for the season. It's an awful lineup. I don't feel great about that one. What do you think?
I love Logan Ohapi. Still love him for next season. I don't know if I'll have any shares if he's going in round five.
Yeah,
that's the hard part. Like, and if people look at the draft board through 11 rounds, I don't have a catcher because like so many guys kept going like earlier than I wanted to take them. And maybe that's something I have to reevaluate if that's the new norm. That's how things change. But there's a slew of catchers I still like, and I wasn't going to force to my hand type situation on certain guys. And I love Logan Ohapi. I was hoping to get him in like round seven or eight, maybe start taking the chance. That did not happen as Rob DiPietro took him in round five. So, you know, if Logan ever figures it out, he's shown the skill sets to be very good. He just hasn't done it. It's only his first full season, to be fair.
Yeah.
But it surprised me to say the least. But again, talent level, if he finds his ceiling, it's an amazing pick. It's just not for me.
Yeah, he could get there. I just worry really like what else is going to be around him next season. Going to be of any help fantasy-wise. The runs and RBIs could be in the 50s, maybe.
Yeah, 30 games of Mike Trout. Come on.
Oh, man. I'm always going to think there's one more year left in Mike Trout.
I hope there is.
I hope so, but it's going to be impossible. It'll just be one random year. He'll probably be like 37 years old, yep. And then he'll hit 42 home runs or something and just completely shock us all. Pull like a Verlander coming off of the TJ where he had like a sub-2 ERA and just at age 40 or whatever. There'll probably be one more year, but there's not a lot of help for Logan Ohapi. We've seen the downside recently. Like, he's been somebody that is probably in a cut in, like, certainly in one catcher leagues, even in some two catcher leagues, 12 teamers for sure, you could argue. He just hasn't been good. So that feels pretty early. The rest of the round, nothing that really shocks me too much. Garrett Cole in the fifth could be great, yep. Could be terrible. I wonder about that cliff for him. The strikeout rates haven't quite been there the last couple. Even though he won the Cy Young last year, below the surface, the strikeouts weren't quite there, neither were the swinging strikes. He's kind of been on a downward trajectory. So as much as it could be great, I do worry about passing up some of the value that went even a few picks later in the next round that I think are a bit safer, guys that are on the opposite end of that spectrum that are kind of on an upward trend. So I worry a little bit about Garrett Cole in the fifth as well.
Yeah, we got a couple guys like Yamamoto who finally, you know, hit the mound recently. You know, going this early, it could be great. Obviously, if you get like 130 innings out of Yamamoto, 150 next year could be good. Also, seeing Grayson Rodriguez, who's been on the IL for a while, we should be maybe back for a start before it's all said and done. But a couple guys that we really don't know how healthy they're going to be, type situations, which makes things fun as well.
Yeah.
Round six. Now, this could be a steal if, like, there's so many guys. I know I've said it with leading off in other shows. These guys that took massive innings jumps, how does that arm react next year? Because, you know, you got I just totally blanked, Lizardo, who's hurt again, who had that massive innings jump. But it's not always the case, as you look at Seth Lugo, for instance, who's just fine. Garrett Crochet was the first pick in round six. That could be amazing, or we'll see. You got Freddy Peralta, Luis Castillo, Logan Webb, Shane McClanahan. So five starting pitchers right out the gate. Shane O'Mac hasn't even pitched and has had two TJs in his career, and he's aged like 25 or 26. Salvador Perez. We have Kyle Schwarber, Schwarbaums, Brenton Doyle, Jack Flaherty, Alexis Diaz, Tanner Bibee, Manny Machado, Shota Imanaga, Michael King, and Sonny Gray. So there was a ton of starting pitchers that went in round six. And honestly, pretty good starting pitchers too. So what's your take on this round six?
Great values. First of all, Jenny Butler. Well, this team is like the favorite, think, right now. Yeah. It always ends up happening with Jenny. You want to avoid her if you see her in a draft room. And it's a fantastic, I'm only really focused on the first six rounds for her here, but getting Garrett Crochet as your SP1, a guy who, without any innings restrictions or any crap like that this year, would have been in talk about the Cy Young Award, especially if the team had any degree of competence. He would have been in that conversation. So getting him in the sixth round, I really like that. There's obviously the worry about how the arm's going to react. That is a concern, but that's a concern for kind of everybody at this point. Like, how many pitchers have not spent time on the shelf this year? Probably not too many, you know. Even just seeing what happened yesterday, there was like four new injuries that came up, four new guys that like went on the injured list. It just, everybody is going to get hurt at some point. It's kind of like running backs at this point, Bubba, for football. Yep. You take them, you kind of hold your breath and hope that they're healthy. But when you get a value like this of Crochet, somebody who could be the SP1 overall, I love that pick first and foremost. The next few picks I also think are really solid. Like, all of these pitchers really, I think, are really great values here. Luis Castillo worries me a little bit. There have been some small concerns I've had with him this season, but overall, it's kind of a small worry. Jack Flaherty is somebody where I don't know how much I trust him. Like, this season, he's been one of my favorite pitchers to watch. I thought that he had a decent chance at the Cy Young, and I thought for a while, honestly, he might have been the better pitcher in Detroit. The results were fantastic. The supporting metrics were, at least he was just as good as Skubal. That's how good he was. But he's done it like 2 out of 7 years. So yeah. I don't know what it's going to look like next year. If he had a 4-5 ERA, I don't think anybody would be terribly surprised by it. So it could be great. It could be a little bit of a risk. But overall, Bibee, Imanaga, Michael King, Sonny Gray, lots of great pitching value in this round. I think that if this is the trend, then I might go a little bit heavier on my hitters earlier in drafts and just bank in this range 5 through 7 and get a bunch of aces, because these are a lot of aces that are going right now.
Yeah, no, I finished the first 11 rounds, look back at it. I love this like round. I said 3 through 7, there's pitchers, so that's fine, but especially 5 through 7, like we're talking about right here. There's a slew of pitchers, and I'm glad you mentioned Jack Flaherty, because it could be an amazing pick, or we've seen so many different types of Jack Flaherty. We've seen Cy Young Jack, we've seen can't finish a season Jack. We've seen he pitches all season, but rather not pitch all season Jack. There's a lot of different Jack Flaherty's out there, and we don't know where he's going to pitch next year. He's a free agent. So I give, he sticks in with the Dodgers, which I'd hate with a passion, that'd probably bode well for Jack Flaherty, but we'll have to wait and see how that pans out. But yeah, a lot of really good pitchers here. And, you know, I made the comment about, we don't know how these guys with extended innings, and you mentioned just take the guys. So many are going to get hurt, do your thing. And I agree. I kind of started to embrace that philosophy towards the end of this last draft season with like Chris Sale of the world, who still is pitching, by the way, for anybody concerned about innings concerns, probably going to win the NL Cy Young. But there's a lot of situations like that. But, you know, some will get hurt, some won't. Just take the good. When they get hurt, replace them and move on. That's like all you can do, but take the good innings and see where it goes. So very fun grouping here, to say the least. Round 7, kicking it off with Robbie Ray, Christian Walker, Randy Arozarena, Hunter Brown. Pick 5 is Will Smith, the catcher. JT Realmuto went to pick 6, a catcher. Hunter Green, Bryce Miller, Spencer Strider finally off the board. Honestly thought he might have gone close to DeGrom, but Strider won't be ready to start the season. So you got a little bit of a discount there. Vinny P went with pick 10. Junior Caminero, that's before Vinny P got hurt, by the way. Brandon Woodruff went pick 12. Matt McClain at 13. 14th was Wilson Contreras. And then Kota Singa went pick 15. So Jenny Butler goes Crochet and Singa back-to-back for a teaser. She took Brian Wu after that. So for, like you said, waiting on starting pitching, not too shabby.
Not too shabby at all. This round is kind of the hoping and praying round for a lot of these guys. Robbie Ray, you're hoping he stays healthy and that the command looks good. Randy Arozarena for the bounce back. Will Smith and JT Realmuto, I worry, especially Realmuto. Like we were talking on Leading Off today, that he has stolen two bases this season. And I did look it up. I mentioned it earlier. Bobby Dalbec did, in fact, steal more bases in 81 at-bats than you got at a JT Realmuto this season. It was awful, and I worry about it. His age, is the cliff there? Are we looking over it at this point? You know, Hunter Green, you're hoping that he's able to kind of keep the ball in the yard in Cincinnati. Strider, you're hoping that he's Strider, and he does not have to, you know, deal with a long layoff and that there's no setbacks, etc. Woodruff, McClain, Senga, you're hoping on bounce back. So a lot of real upside here, but not a lot of safety that I feel hitting the draft button on a lot of them. Junior Caminero, is he going to take that next step forward, or is he going to, you know, give you 16 homers and seven steals and hit 240 or something? Because you never know. You just never know in terms of the security. And again, it's very hard to project security for anybody, especially at this time when we don't have projections or anything. But this round does feel very risky for a lot of these picks.
Yeah, no, it's definitely start, you know, picking your poisons. Round seven, we're getting deeper into things already. So it's picks basically 91 through 105, if my math is correct. And it's definitely out there. I love the Christian Walker picks. I'm a big Christian Walker guy. Yeah. I was not in on either of those, you know, Realmuto Smiths. I think people know my thoughts on Smith, especially kind of out on that one. But Strider's the one I'm really intrigued by, because all it's going to take is him, you know, if he starts showing up in spring, he's ahead of schedule or something to change, and that pick's going to balloon. But, you know, it's fun looking at Roof here. He's got Skeens, Glasnow, Ober, Strider. Like, by the second month of the season, that could be one heck of a starting four or an IL team.
Yeah, maybe once,
yeah. Yeah, because a lot of those names are on that throws too fast list right now. And so that could be interesting as well. So it's a fun round. Yeah, Woodruff hasn't thrown, so there's a million questions in this round. I completely agree with you on that.
Strider, though, I mean, in the seventh round, if I see him in the seventh round, it's going to be hard to pass that up. Even in, like, the fifth or sixth round, I feel like we know, like, SP1 is not only possible, but if he's out there for 25 starts, it's likely. So has it been confirmed he won't start the season? You mentioned that earlier. Do we know that?
I don't think he will. It's because we think, you know, a year-ish, give or take. But like I said, maybe he got the brace and he's back sooner. So all it takes is coming back to spring training, quote-unquote, ahead of schedule, and that could change the whole outlook on this.
You mentioned guys who could shoot up if we see he's healthy or get anything. Like, he might be maybe not in the first round, but like 1-2 turn, second round, if we get good reports, I could see that happening.
Yep, most definitely. Round eight, we got Brian Wu, who wrapped up the starting five for the Seattle Mariners, getting drafted in this draft in the rotation, which was fun. Bo Bichette, Alec Bohm, Josh Naylor, Jared Jones went and pick five of round eight. Tristan Cassis, Sedan Rafaela, Justin Steele, who that was before he got hurt, which is fun. Ezekiel Tovar, Brian Reynolds, Anthony Santander, Brendan Faught, Jordan Westberg, Riley Green, and Teoscar Hernandez round eight. So we're starting to see those outfielders fly off the board if you decide to wait on outfielder.
Yeah, they're kind of gone at this point. And there's some, maybe not gone, but there's some kind of more interesting names, especially as we get into the next round. Santander, I think, and even Brian Reynolds, those are really rock solid picks. And even Riley Green, another guy we mentioned earlier today, I love Riley Green. Over the course of a full season, I really think the Tigers are going to do really good things next year as well. I don't think they're going to necessarily add a bunch of pieces, but their own in-house growth has been pretty solid as of late. They got a lot of great young prospects. And Green himself has been really good when he's been out there. It hasn't really been talked about enough this season, but that's a really, really great pick. It's a fine round. There's nothing that massively stands out. The Bo Bichette drop is going to be something that's interesting to monitor. Not just, I mean, I'm a Blue Jays homer, of course, but I think that's something that is one of the more drastic fall offs of the last couple of seasons. A guy who was, I think, heading into last year, I think he was a third rounder, probably.
Yeah, second or third, yeah, for sure.
And when I did a show, like I did an ADP prediction show myself with Justin Mason like a month ago, and we were thinking he's probably not even a top 100 pick. And I don't think he was here, or maybe he just got in, actually, just inside the top 100. That's a massive fall. Is that where he keeps going? Is he going to be in the eighth round? Is he going to be in the 10th round? Are people going to take a chance in the fourth or fifth? So I want to keep a close eye on Bo, but this feels like a pretty solid bet to take coming off of a down season for a guy that we know can be a second round type of player.
Yeah, I was all about that pick by Jason DuPont, who's actually doing very well this season. Him and Weimer are battling it out for first in this league. If you give me a price tag like that on Bichette, where we know the upside can be so much greater, I'm willing to take that because I think the ADP shows his floor, which is what we're seeing. I don't think he can be worse than we've seen. So, like, even if he improves slightly, he's now a fifth round pick. Like, you're still getting value on this eighth round selection. So, I think it's quite an intriguing spot there for the Bo Bichette value in this one, especially when after it's Rafaela Tovar, who's not been nearly as good, I think people think he has been. Volpe comes up after that. Shortstop gets pretty bleak pretty quick. That's why I jumped on Adames in round five. Like, I thought that was early, but if you look at the rest of the shortstop landscape, it's not as pretty as people think.
It's also late batting average, and you don't usually get anybody who could even whiff at 300 at this type a part of the draft, unless you're really sacrificing other categories. You're not getting a lot of steals with Bo, but he could easily hit 300 with 25 homers next season, and the potential for that in round eight is going to be pretty enticing.
And the other thing that kind of stands out here is like Josh Naylor, Tristan Casas, first base dries up tremendously in this as well. So These guys are moving up because after him, it's Berger, Steer, and CES for like the last first basemans to go in this draft. I don't have a first baseman, and that is the one thing I'm terrified about right now, like during this draft. Like Goldie didn't go. I'm just not a Goldie guy, but going past round 11, it's not too shabby. Yeah. But there's some rough spots there for sure. All right, before we go to round nine, we got a question. John Wilder in the chat says, "What's up, gentlemen? If you draft the Bichette this year, he is dead to you. I speak from experience." Yeah, Wilder's a good ball player, a good fantasy player too. So that's pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. Trust me, I'm in Toronto. I definitely hear you. But if he's going outside the top 100 picks, it's going to be one of those where I just, like, you know, hope and a prayer type of things. But the track record is there. The track record of three straight seasons of leading the league in hits. He had an injury plague down season for a team that sucked offensively for the majority of the year. So I don't want to read too much into it, especially considering he's, I think, 26. He's not like 34 or something. You know, we're mentioning Paul Goldschmidt. He hasn't fallen off a cliff. So I'm going to buy back in for sure, especially if he's going where he's going here.
Guys, needs to get those soft tissue injuries figured out. That's all I'm hoping for. Round nine, kicking off with Cal Raleigh. There's the aforementioned Jake Berger, Cody Bellinger at the third pick to Bloomfield, Spencer Steer, Max Fried, Anthony Volpe, Luis Garcia Jr. of the Washington Nationals went with the seventh pick in round nine. Jake McCarthy, I'm kind of having second thoughts on that one real quickly. Steven Kwan, Jason Dominguez went at pick 10 to Roof. CES, Josh Young with the 12th pick in round nine. That could be interesting, all things said and done. Taj Bradley, we have Seiya Suzuki. That's the one I should have taken instead of Jake McCarthy. And Xander Bogaerts rounding out round nine. Bogaerts continues to fall as his production has fallen, but has picked up of late. What's your thoughts here in round nine?
Yeah, I think I agree. Like, I would have gone Suzuki over Jake McCarthy there. I would have gone Suzuki over Jake McCarthy. But Jake McCarthy's been actually a lot better than I think a lot of people realize this season for an amazing offense, quite a bit of a better offense than what Chicago's throwing out there. So it could end up paying off. It definitely could end up paying off. Volpe, I don't know, man. I don't know if I want to be taking him inside the first 10 rounds, even of a 15-teamer, given how bad we can see or how bad the downside is for him. Like, shortstop's a deep position. Do I need to be taking a chance on him, a guy who's hitting 250? Like, he steals bases, but 55 ribbies, 11 homers, 251 average. I don't know. Shortstop's deep enough where I don't really feel like I would want to take him there. If that's the price, I'll be out. Max Fried in the ninth, feels like a really, really nice bargain. It feels like one of those picks where it's because we don't have ADP and the whole site set up, because nobody's actually, I think, once real drafts are, not that this is a real draft, don't get me wrong, I don't want to get myself in trouble there, this is a real draft, but once draft season actually starts up, Max Fried's not going to be going this late. So who was it that made this pick? Mike Mager. I mean, we're talking about a great fantasy player, so no surprise, but that is a fantastic pick, I think.
Yeah, when Fried went off the board there, I was like, I have him focused on me. I was happy with my starting, you know, my three starting pitchers I already have, but I'm like, that could be that could be one for sure. I'm with you on that one. So that could be fun. And Volpe, I'm out on as well. But this is a sharp, sharp, sharp room. So Everyone's got their draft strategies, how they want to fill out their board, and that's what makes it a ton of fun. In round 10, things get even more entertaining. You got Brandon Nimmo leading off the way. Francisco Alvarez, you know, at one point this year when he came back from injury, probably would have been a top four pick at this rate. Now he's the 10th round pick, and at least he went deep today, but it's been a rough go for him. Brent Rooker in round 10. Bloomfield picked Marcelo Ozuna in round 4. He's already saying he would rather have Rooker at 10 than Ozuna at 4. That's fun. Clay Holmes comes off the board. That's when he was still closer for the Yankees. David Bednar off the board, still closer for Pittsburgh at the time. Spencer Schwellenbach of the Braves, that's going to be a fun discussion point with the 2-4-6 pick in round 10. Then you got Adelis Garcia, how the mighty have fallen. Bregman, Vientos, Gallen, Horner, Simeon, Stevenson, Yelich, and Carlos Rodon. Before I give more of my thoughts, what are your thoughts here on round 10? Because this is just like a smorgasbord of go to a buffet and get what you want, I guess, because there's really no, like, either some rounds, okay, these are starting pitcher rounds, and this is just all over the place.
How the hell did Brent Rooker fall this far?
I think it's the util only threw people off. And it, what's really weird, I think it's like 18 games right now. He's got an outfield or something. So he could sneak in outfield eligibility, but probably won't, because they just play him at util over and over again. But yes, he fell a ton.
He's DH'd 114 times this year. That's kind of where they see him. But my God, might be the pick of the draft, especially heading to Sacramento next year. Yeah. You know, this is something that you and I have discussed on leading off, that ballpark upgrade is massive. The Coliseum stinks. And he's still got 35 homers. I think the thing that is probably going to come down with Brent Rooker is the batting average. I don't think he's a 300 hitter. I think that he's probably a 260 hitter. You know, he's hitting, got a 370 BABIP this year. I don't really see that sustaining necessarily, but if he hit 50 homers next year, I don't think I'd be that surprised by it. Given his raw power, which is a 17% barrel rate, 51 hard hit in a hitter's park, could be the pick of the draft. Brandon Nimmo, that first pick to Jenny, you know, no surprise. He's just reliable. People just don't really care to draft him. For whatever reason, he always just kind of falls, and I feel like he was probably a little bit earlier here than he was going this past season, but he just produces. I mean, even in a year where his batting average isn't great, 77 runs, 75 ribbies, 18 homers, 13 steals, he gets there in terms of the value. So I really like that pick. The closers are interesting. I think Bednar is a nice value here. This is kind of what I was talking about earlier in the show, where I just want to take the guys that fall. It's definitely been an awful ride, but if David Bednar is going in the 9th, 10th, 11th round, I'll probably take him there. Bregman and Vientos, I think Vientos should go ahead of Bregman at this point. Vientos has been amazing this whole season. He's on, you know, what I mentioned earlier, that upward versus downward trajectory. The lineup context definitely goes to Bregman, but I think Mark Vientos probably should go ahead of him. Those are the main ones. And then Schwellenbach is one where I'm going to be really interested as well. I think that he could potentially even go up to like a 6th or 7th round pick, if not even higher. What we've seen from him has been ace level type of stuff. So this could be an amazing pick from Ryan Roof here as his SP, what is it? His SP3. It could be fantastic.
Yeah. The Schwellenbach pick, that's been talked about on many shows, and I'm glad we're talking about him here, because he is going to be a conundrum for a little while. Cause I could see arguments where he goes up another 4 or 5 rounds if he continues out the season the way he's doing. Like, what's to stop him from being like in a Bailey Ober discussion? Maybe I'm overstating it, but to me, there's like some Bailey Ober's better, but okay, what's to stop him from being like in a Jack Flaherty discussion, a Tanner Bibee discussion, that round 6 group of pitchers?
Yeah,
I think it's fair. So, like,
where he belongs, I think that's where he belongs, probably.
So, yeah, that's like another fun one. Like, when you don't have an ADP and you're just kind of doing your thing, and all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, like that just happened. And it makes for a fun staff where he's got Chris Sale, Cole Reagans, and he gets to wait till round 10 to get Spencer Schwellenbach. That's what makes these a ton of fun. And then we take a break until October, and we'll do more. And so we've had a little more time to look at stuff, but still no ADP. So it makes it fun. All right, round 11 here to wrap things up. Kicks off with Wyatt Langford falling to round 11, which I was wondering when he would go, because we saw Chirio in round 3, James Wood in round 3, Jackson Merrill in round 4. Honestly, I don't think round 4 to round 11 deserves to be that big of a gap for Wyatt Langford. We'll see. Ian Happ, Kikuchi, Lawrence Butler. This one was fun, James Anderson. Jeffrey Springs, Luis Eel. That could be a gift. Pete Crow Armstrong, Tyler Fitzgerald. I went homer there. I can get made fun of if anybody wants. Colt McCauser, Ryan Pepio, Sandy Alcantara was a fun one for Waxman. Josh Lowe, Willier Abreu. That was interesting to Hulusker. Kenley Jansen and Ronaldo Lopez with the last pick. And that was a pick that many of us didn't know what to do with Ronaldo, and now he's hurt. So we'll see where that goes. But what's your thoughts here on the final round, round 11?
The first thing that really stuck out to me, honestly, when I first looked at the board, it was the first thing that caught my eye out of anything, was Pete Crow Armstrong being drafted. And I will say that this was because this took place
before he got hot.
Is it 3 weeks or a month ago?
Yeah, it's like mid-August, so yeah, like 3 weeks ago, probably.
Three weeks ago. At first, I was like, what the hell am I looking at here? But credit to Rob, because Pete Crow Armstrong, another guy we mentioned today or on Monday, has been like a top 15. He's been like a first round player for a month. So it's really not that crazy of a pick when you think about it. Some of the pitchers are a little bit interesting. Luis Eel could be great in that spot. And the same thing with Kikuchi. I know that Ryan right away was kind of regretting the Kikuchi pick, but the skills have been there all season, even as a Blue Jay. He's had much better results as an Astro. But yeah, that one, I don't think Ryan needs to be hard on himself. I don't know if he's come around more from that, but that could be a really nice pick. Eel worries me to some extent. I don't know how much I would trust him next year, but maybe that's just, there's nothing that statistically would point to it necessarily. It's more just my kind of gut feeling that I don't really want him. But that price, considering what we've seen from him this year, is hard to argue with. Sandy is also pretty interesting at this point in the draft. Like, we know that he could give you potential SP1, SP2 type of stuff. But at the same time, I got to be honest. I don't know. Is he going to be ready for opening day? Is he expected to be back from day one?
I think so. He said he's throwing right now. So if this team was in it, he'd come back, he said, type thing.
Oh right. I do remember hearing that. So the thing with him is he needs the volume. You can't get 120 Sandy innings and hope for the best. You need 200 of them, because he doesn't strike out a hell of a lot of batters. The wins are not really going to be there in Miami, but in the 11th round, especially if he's ready to go from the start of the season, I love that pick. I think that's a fantastic pick, but I think it is a bit of an odd last couple rounds, where, like you mentioned earlier on, there are more themes, and then over here in the last two rounds, it's just complete randomness. It's hard to predict at this point of the draft. This is when you kind of, even in a real not like in a draft season draft, you kind of start to throw away ADP at this point in time. But it does become kind of a smorgasbord of colors here when you're looking at the board.
Yep. Things got interesting. They're gonna get more interesting when we pick this up in about a month. We'll start drafting here again as the NFBC opens up its draft rooms earlier and earlier. So that'll be fun. Like, one guy I forgot to mention, round 10, Christian Yelich falling to the back end around 10. Not saying it's wrong because of the back issues, but that could become a gifty situation as well.
No Trout, eh? No Mike Trout went?
No Mike Trout this year. He's gone later and later every time we do it. No Mike Trout. I think we've all kind of given up on that one for now. I'm curious when he'll go. He'll probably go, I'm guessing, around 15-ish, give or take. But
maybe.
Yeah. No Trout yet. No Trout.
I think I'd take him over Willie or Abreu as of today, though. I feel like if I had to take one or the other for my team next year as of today, I think I'd go Trout.
Yeah, could be interesting for sure. I'm not gonna argue that one, because Trout's literally, if he plays 100 games, he's better than most of these guys drafted in the last five rounds. So yeah, it's just one of those things. Just play 100. Like, it's what the discussion last year with DeGrom. Can DeGrom throw 120 innings? Like, then it's worth every first round pick type thing. It's
worth the 1-1, probably.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, certain guys don't need the full time out there as some others do.
Yeah, lots of fun though. Great board. Looks like a great time.
Yep, lots of fun, and we'll continue that soon. And I know you and I will probably be in drafts later on together, so we'll have some fun duking it out there. But let's recap some Fab this week, week 25 Fab. There's two more weeks to go after this, but we'll hit on some of the most added players and maybe some interesting names here for a bit here. But as usual, looking at the NFBC Online Championship 12-team leagues, because it's kind of the most people play 10s and 12s, like to focus on that wheelhouse, and the most added player this week. And what's fun is you can tell people are not focused anymore, because it's not a financial thing. It's not focused because Trevor Story was only added in 104 leagues. So that tells you a lot. He came back over the weekend. He was playing really good in rehab to wind out his rehab stint. And he's played in three games since returning, hit safely in all three games, has a stolen base over that period. Story went for a max 201. That must be nice to have that kind of money. A low of one because it's the NFBC OC, so you'll have a low of one on everybody, which always makes you laugh. But what's your thoughts on Trevor Story for the last couple of weeks of the season? Were you interested in a guy like Story, and what are we thinking on him?
Yeah, I mean, if you're still seeing him available anywhere, I don't mind picking him up. Certainly, I mean, the ballpark is great. The lineup has been great. He's going to play every single day. He's been batting seventh or eighth, but it feels like if he gets in a little bit of a groove, it wouldn't take much to move him up a few spots either. So, yeah, I mean, I know we're doing like NFBC Fab Recap, but if you're just looking at more shallow formats as well, he's generally speaking like 20% rostered or below. So I really like Trevor Story as a pickup. Maybe don't get your hopes up that he's going to be old Trevor Story, but he can still be a valuable asset over the last couple of weeks, I think.
Yeah, for sure. He's only 50% rostered in OCs, so go find him this weekend if you want him. And Yahoo, yeah, like I know you mentioned him, but I'm leading off like when I do my articles for Fantasy Pros and even my Substack, I use Yahoo. Or no, Substack, I use NFBC. But I do a lot of Fantasy Pro stuff, so use Yahoo, and the roster rates there are just hilarious to me. Absolutely hilarious. Reed Detmers. He was added in 91 leagues, as high as $36, as low as a dollar. I've been screaming at the Angels to bring him back, but they wanted that one more year of control. That's what they wanted, and they got it. And Reed Detmers, even though it was kind of up and down in the minors, he's back, and he shut down the Dodgers for 10 Ks. Dominated, I believe, was the Twins here earlier this week. What are your thoughts on Reed Detmers going forward? Because before I pass things off to you, this is what Reed Detmers, obviously, schedule could change. But we're looking at a next week, Chicago White Sox, Houston Astros, two-step with a Texas Rangers the final week of the season.
So if it's a daily league, I'd probably would try and avoid that Astros start if you can. But you know what you mentioned, he's come back, he's had two starts. Neither of them cupcake matchups by any stretch. They're both top five, seven offenses at worst, and he dominated both of them. So I was worried at first. I believe initially he was going to start this weekend against the Astros and miss the White Sox, and then he would have got Astros, and that would have been a little bit more daunting. But I think there was some shuffling, as you see this time of year. So yeah, he'll get the two-step. So he'll be somebody to watch for next week's Fab as well. If you still see him available anywhere, I'd imagine in 12-teamers, he's probably still out there. Maybe not so much in 15s, but this time of year, given what he's done recently, I think that's a pretty close to a must start in all formats except for shallow ones.
Yep, big fan of what Detmers is doing. He'll have his blow-ups, but yeah, a lot of these guys aren't striking guys out the way Detmers is, and that's something big as the season comes winding down. Johnny DeLuca, guy I loved in early draft season, especially draft and hold season, picked him up and down throughout the season, hasn't always panned out well. DeLuca's playing regularly for the Rays right now, and he's picked up in 90 leagues, as high as $16, as low as a dollar. Over like the last 3 weeks, .333 average, three homers, seven stolen bases. What's your thoughts on big Johnny DeLuca, who has revitalized himself here in August and September?
Yeah, over the last the last three games, he's actually been in the three spot for the Rays as well. So he's getting a good spot in the lineup, playing every single day. Stealing bases, he's hitting for power. There's no reason not to pick him up. If it's a shallower three outfielder leagues, probably not. But if it's any kind of five outfielder format, I really like DeLuca. He's on a lot of waiver wires. I liked him a lot earlier in the season. I thought that this was going to be a great Fab pickup in week five or six or something, and spent a hell of a lot of money on him, ended up dropping him everywhere. But you know, a really promising player, not just for down the stretch, but for next year as well. Less than 300 at-bats, and we're talking about 16 steals, six homers. Could be pretty good. And over the last month, hitting .273, like, not a bad little player at all. And especially if he keeps hitting third, this could be a really nice play for five outfielders.
Yep, I totally agree. I'm kind of impressed, actually. I make fun of people not paying attention. The fact 90 leagues picked up Johnny DeLuca does show that people are paying a little more attention than expected. Cade Povich was picked up in 77 leagues, as high as $53, as low as a dollar. been talked about a lot on recent shows, but you know, he pitched phenomenally against the White Sox. Stop us if you've heard that before. But he had the two-step this week at Boston and then at Detroit, and Boston had their way with Cade Povich. So what's your thoughts on Povich? That starts in the rear view. Nothing we can do about that. But like, we got Tigers this weekend for Povich, and then Tigers next week as well, Twins the final week. So what are your thoughts on Povich for the rest of the way?
Couldn't do it in a 12-teamer. It would have to be really – like, I might be thinking AL-only type of league here. Like, even in 15s, it's been – awful. It's really been awful. And the Tigers, you know, they might not be a juggernaut, but I've spoken very highly about them this week on a few different shows, including this one. They scare me a little bit, and especially the way he allows home runs, the way the command is all over the place. Strikeouts are not a sure thing at all. 17.7% strikeout rate is just awful. You know, the swinging strike rate's not as bad. It's almost 10%, but I just don't trust them as far as I could throw them right now. When you're looking at the game logs and everybody is destroying you, albeit a tough little run of schedule. Houston, Dodgers, and Boston at Fenway is pretty rough outside of that White Sox start. But this time of year, I would really just be desperate for a volume guy, just really needing strikeouts and the potential for a win if I'm playing him. I don't feel good about it at all if he's in my lineup.
Yeah, no, it's a sketchy situation. Like, there's upside there, but you mentioned Detroit. Like, I could see people taking the chance on Detroit if they want to, but at the same time, I completely agree with everything you're saying about how well Detroit's been hitting of late. They're a fun team, like you said, have been talked about quite a bit, and I do like what we're seeing from them. The next most added player is Joey Bart, picked up in 74 leagues, as high as 22, as low as a dollar, came off the IL. I don't have a ton more on Bart, but do you have anything on Joey Bart?
This must really feel great as a Giants fan to see what he's done this year.
Yep, I have him rostered everywhere right now, so I'm trying to take the biggest advantage of it I can.
I mean, he's a two-catcher league guy. You could maybe argue in a deep one-catcher league you'd play him, but he's somebody that I think is going to be kind of interesting for next season. Like, he's been a great offensive player. He's walking more. The strikeouts were always just atrocious. They were garbage, like 35% plus strikeout rate, down at 25%. You know, WRC plus in the 130s. He could be a really nice, cheaper play in two catcher leagues next season. Hits the ball really, really hard. I think he'll have an everyday role. So I like Joey Bart probably more than the average person, I think.
Yeah, no, I do too. That's why when I said in the too early draft, I don't have a catcher. Bart's one of the like seven guys I have circled. So yeah. I'm definitely intrigued on coming away with that. Next up, we got Seth Brown, picked up in 61 leagues, as high as 30 bucks, as low as a dollar. The A's faced five righties this week out of six. He's facing lefties too. Now he's hitting that well. And, you know, since the 23rd, hitting 350 with four homers and 15 RBIs. What's your thoughts on a guy like Seth Brown? Is he deep league only? Do you see 12 league team viability? Are you a believer in what we're seeing?
Could be in a pinch in a 12 teamer. I think he's more of a 15 team guy. I don't really trust the lineup. I mean, he has 14 homers this year. He scored 29 runs in 109 games. That just doesn't give me that warm, fuzzy feeling. He's not going to steal. The batting average could be good. He could go 0 for his next 15. It wouldn't surprise me. It'd be more of a hoping for the best in a decent matchup kind of week. And I think it'd be more so of a 15-team play than a 12 for me.
For sure. Yu Darvish, he was picked up in 60 leagues, as high as 75 bucks, as low as a dollar. Made his return two starts ago in like 2 2/3. His past start went five innings through around 70 pitches. So we're seeing the pitch count come up for you, which is great to see. And when you look at Yu Darvish coming up here, he's got a two-step next week, Houston, and then the White Sox, and then wraps up the season with the Arizona Diamondbacks. So 2 out of 3 starts, not ideal. What's your thoughts on Yu Darvish? Because it's not like we're not looking at a streamer pitcher. We're looking at a guy coming off an injury, so kind of is a streaming pitcher. 2 out of 3 matchups are tricky.
Yeah, I mean, his last start was definitely a step in the right direction, but it was the Mariners in Seattle, and it wasn't like, you know, he wasn't dominant. 5 strikeouts, 2 earned runs. It was a good start. He got the win. Didn't blow you away, though, and considering the matchups, like especially in daily leagues against Houston, I'm not starting him unless I'm desperate. You know, you start this time of year, especially in head-to-head leagues, plotting it out. Okay, I have 7 starts. The opponent has 10 starts, and I need to kind of just catch up volume-wise. In those type of situations, I'd throw him out there, but if I'm protecting ratios or anything like that in a roto sense, I just don't think I would want to trust them for those starts. Against the White Sox, sure. But the other two, I don't think so.
Yep, kind of with you on that one as well. Clark Schmidt picked up in 58 leagues, as high as 88, as low as a buck. Schmidt's returning from the IL. for the Yanks. He sets the pitch on Thursday. We recorded on Wednesday. He gets the Red Sox on Thursday, gets Seattle next week if the schedule stays the same, and then gets Baltimore the following week as the Yankees look to be going six-man the rest of the way. So Boston, Seattle, Baltimore, Clark Schmidt coming off the IL. How excited were you on that one?
No, yes, no for those three of them. Seattle, for sure. I'd throw myself out against the Mariners in I was about to call it whatever their park is called. Was it Petco? Not Petco. T-Mobile.
T-Mobile.
Yeah. T-Mobile or Safeco is the old one. I'm getting all my ballpark names mixed up there. I'm throwing Clark Schmidt against Seattle, wherever they're playing. The other two matchups, again, the same kind of thing as what I said before. If you need the volume, okay. But I don't know against Boston. Against Boston. And what was the other team you said?
Baltimore.
Baltimore. Those kind of scare me. It would need to be like, I need the volume versus just, I'm going to add him and start him because I have fab left or I have an ad left for the week. I would actually need to use him for that sense.
Okay. A couple more here just for funds. I'm going to skip around here. Rhett Lauder was picked up in 54 leagues, as high as 40, as low as a buck. I had a two-step this week against St. Louis and Minnesota. St. Louis was his third start. ERA is very good. Doesn't strike out a ton of guys. Got Minnesota this Sunday. And then if he sticks in the rotation, it's Pittsburgh next week. Cubs the final week. The lack of strikeouts kind of kept me off of Rhett Lauder, but what are your thoughts when you see his overall profile?
Don't love the Minnesota option, but for the final two starts, I think he'd be a pretty good play. The lack of strikeouts are definitely a concern there. If they are those last two starts in Cincinnati, that could worry me a little bit just because of that ballpark. I think he's more of a deeper league play. Like, I wouldn't look at him if you're somebody who just generally looks at like ERA. You might say, holy crap, 0.59 ERA. I got to pick this guy. Like, I don't think anybody's that good, but he's certainly not going to be that good for you consistently. So I think, again, if you need the volume, he's fine, but I would try and skip that Minnesota start and just get him for the final two if you can. Pick him up and bench him, but I don't know about that one. Minnesota has been sneakily very good this year.
Yep, totally agree with you there. Last guy I want to ask you about here is Connor Norby, picked up in 47 leagues, as high as 101, as low as a dollar. Since he joined the Marlins on the 19th of August, hitting .312 with six homers, what's just your overall thoughts on Norby? Because he should be rostered. He's hit safely in all but two games for the Marlins. Like, the dude's just a hitting machine here. But what's your thoughts on Connor Norby?
He's been fantastic. He's been quite a bit better than I thought he would. In the shallower formats, you're looking at second and third base eligibility. He had this thing with the foot. He was out. He missed one game with a foot injury. But that's not a concern. He got back into the lineup. I think that he is somebody that should be rostered and started pretty much everywhere at this point. Like, over the last month, he's hitting .312 with six homers, a couple steals. Even in a bad lineup, 18 runs and 13 ribbies. I think that Baltimore really screwed up giving him away for Trevor Rogers. That's the last thing I'll say on that one.
Yep, that's a big screw up indeed. But all right, we'll wrap it up there on the Fab recap. A lot of these other guys are just kind of like filling the blanks for what you need right now. So, Joe, while we're at it, let's recap some of our Fab for the week. If you have any, you can do all your leagues, do some of your leagues, whatever floats your boat. And who'd you pick up this week?
Well, I'll talk about some of the more noteworthy ones in the more competitive leagues, or the ones where I'm still got a chance, because the guys I'm picking up where I'm 14th and 13th in the leagues, I don't think people need to hear about those ones. So the On the Wire podcast, friends of ours, Adam Howe, Kevin Hastings, they have a listener league where I'm in second. I'm very close to first. We're gonna probably cash in that one regardless, but trying to push myself over the edge. So Valente Belazo was somebody that I picked up. I overbid like crazy on him, but I have like $130 left in that league somehow. So I was thinking, holy crap, I got to start spending some dough here. So I spent 28. The runner-up bid was $2, but I got a really good first start out of him. It is a two-stepper, but I'm happy with what I've seen so far there. Spencer Horwitz was also sitting on the wire. I spent 37 of my remaining dollars on him. He's been fantastic. We've talked about him a lot. He was out of the lineup today, but I mean, he's hitting for power. He's hitting for batting average. He's been in the middle of the lineup pretty much every day. So those are a couple of pickups in that league. TGFBI is also one where I've been very competitive, and I picked up Lane Thomas this past week, 24, with a runner-up of 6. That has been a fantastic pickup this week. Bubba and I were mentioning him earlier today, and then he went 3 for 4, had four Maybe driven in, seven ribbies in the last 24 hours. So I will absolutely take that. I added Ty France and I sat him down, picking him up for when they do go back to Cincinnati. They're away this week. But that is a league where I lost Vinny Pasquantino. It's been a bit of a revolving door at first base. And then I took a bit of a chance here. I'm trying to catch up in the overall. I think I'm like 15th or 16th overall. I need strikeouts. I need a bit of the volume stats, like I was mentioning earlier. So I'm taking a chance on Javier Assad at Coors Field this week, which I don't feel amazing about. But in 131 innings, it's been a 3.14 ERA, a 1.34 WHIP, which I don't really love. But WHIP isn't really a concern for me right now. I need strikeouts. I need the potential for a win. So those are the 15-team guys. In the 12-teamers, the consistent pickup that I made this week and egg all over my face is David Festa. I picked him up all over my 12-teamers. I don't play as many 12-teamers as I do 15s, but Festa against the Angels, I was thinking this was a beautiful opportunity. And then four innings, I think it was four earned, four hits, just not good stuff. So a bit of a mixed bag. Going to hang my hat on that Lane Thomas pickup in TGFBI and try to ride that to the overall. But overall, pretty mixed bag this week.
Yep, no, it's fun seeing all the different picks based on what team needs are, especially this time of year, way different than earlier on. So does make it quite interesting. For me, I'll do my 15s and my 12s. Olak, I picked up Mike Yastrzemski, dropped Austin Hayes. Hayes goes to the IL. Loved the Giants facing so many righties, and Yaz is streaking right now, and he's already gone deep once this week. $4, runner-up three. And then in this one, I got Joey Bart, dropped Francisco Alvarez. He went deep today, but for a buck, got Joey Bart. Alvarez has been horrible, so I'm not even mad about that home run today, honestly. Listener League auction one, picked up Joey Bart, dropped Corey Lee, picked up JT Jen, dropped Tyler Glasnow. I just don't believe we see much fantasy viability from Glasnow the rest of the way. Jen gets the Chicago White Sox this week, then I will drop him and move on, as this is strictly a streaming spot, because I'm going to double check before I speak too far out of school. But yeah, Jen gets the Cubs next week in Wrigley. I'll pass on that. Then the Texas Rangers. So yeah, Jen's a one and done for me. Then I picked up Tommy Pham and dropped Jordan Montgomery. $1, no runner up there. Tommy Pham's been playing pretty well. Quiet this week, but been swinging it well. Then my other listener league, auction listener league, picked up Yastrzemski, dropped Ramon Urias, who's on the IL, 4-2. Picked up Kyle Stowers, dropped Austin Hayes. Stowers is starting to hit as well. He's no Connor Norby in that trade, but he's starting to hit pretty well, playing every day. Some leadoff roles, some middle of the order, fifth, sixth type stuff for Stowers. All right, my three OCs, my three 12s, and this is where bidding always gets fun. In OC one, picked up Andrus Chaparro, dropped Connor Joe four with no runner up. Picked up Mickey Moniak for all the righties that the Angels are facing. Dropped Ramon Laureano 4-0 as Laureano started losing playing time in Atlanta, but is gaining it back this week, of course, after I dropped him. And then this is the one I told you, I think, Monday morning before we recorded. I was busy this weekend, put a bid in for Patrick Corbin, $3, no runner-up. At least I didn't have to break the bank for that. Dropped Lourdes Gurriel Jr., who's on the IL, and I'm just, if you're on the IL this time of year, I'm pretty much done with you. Then I picked up Joey Bart, dropped Adrian Del Castillo, who proceeded to go guard today. OC2, Cade Povich dropped Justin Steele, so that was a double middle finger to me. Patrick Corbin dropped Albert Suarez, another double middle finger to me. Joey Bart dropped Miguel Amaya, and then Jose Tena dropped JP Sears. Tena's been pretty good. Like, I'm really curious to see where he goes come next season. And my last one here, OC3, another Joey Bart pickup. If you haven't picked up on the trend yet this week, dropped Miguel Amaya, picked up Mickey Moniak, dropped Brandon Lau. So a lot of – I needed catching help and some pitching, and the pitching didn't go as planned, of course. So fun times in my roles. I'm trying to hang on for some cash in a couple of those OCs. All right, Joe. Got a couple listener questions before we head on out of here. And the first one is from Matt Goldberg. He says, I'm in a dynasty league, a couple years away from contention, so he's rebuilding still. What are a few names I could realistically target on the second base or starting pitcher side of things? And for trading for Aaron, like you trade Arenado to potentially get some starting pitchers or second basemen, that's the key part. So anybody stand out? Because Arenado, I'm not sure what his value in dynasty is these days, is the problem.
Yeah, you're picking the brain of two guys who are not dynasty specialists here, but no. I can't imagine Arenado would be considered a top 12 third baseman at this point? Like, is he still like a third base one? I know that's more of a football kind of ranking scheme thing, but is he in that top 12 anymore? Probably not.
It's close, yeah.
If you're going to target a second baseman, maybe Jonathan India. I mean, you got a decent park at least. He's had a pretty solid season. There have been ups and downs, but he's been pretty decent overall. I wonder about maybe a Norby. I wonder about Connor Norby.
If he was slumping, he'd probably have a great chance to do it. I don't know, right? He's so red hot. I think it'll be tough. I'd give it a try. I'd give it a damn good try. Maybe that team needs a third baseman. They're a third baseman away from contending.
I just don't think Arenado is really going to be that attractive of a piece on his own. You're going to have to throw another additional piece, or you're going to have to throw a draft pick or fab or something there, or else you're going to be getting a similar type of, you know, mid-30s type of player, like on the pitching side. It's really hard to even come up with a value for Arenado. Like, I wonder if you could go out and get, I don't know, Christopher Sanchez is probably shooting too high, or Brady Singer, Ryan Pepio. I don't know. Bowden Francis probably going too high right now because he looks like Pedro Martinez recently, but I don't know. There might be some kind of mid-tier names that could be pushed down a little bit. Hell, maybe some people are soured on Garrett Crochet because he hasn't been pitching as much, and we mentioned earlier that there's innings concerns. Some people will look at the last month of Crochet where he has a 5.40 ERA and a 1.35 whip. You could say Arenado is a future Hall of Famer, et cetera, et cetera. You got to do some narrative building potentially.
Yes.
But those are some names that I would potentially just try and feel out. But it is a tricky one with an aging third baseman and in a pretty poor lineup at this point to think you're going to get max value for Arenado. Probably held him a year too long, if we're being honest. But do what you can.
What I would try to do for the pitching side of it is go look at SP3s or injured pitchers.
Yeah.
Go take your chances there. You might be able to strike some gold in that situation. Otherwise, things are a little bleak overall is the way I would kind of look at things.
Yeah.
All right. The last one I got here is from @Josh_Devries. What did we do as fans to deserve this Corbin Carroll comeback?
Josh is a good dude. Josh is a good dude. He hosts a good show. You guys should check out Josh. He does Immaculate Grid. It's a fun show. They've had me on before. Good guys. But what do we do to deserve the Corbin Carroll comeback? I don't know. I really don't know. I guess the shoulder's been fine this whole time, and he wanted to challenge himself to hit more home runs this season than he did last year without hitting one for the first half of the year. I honestly have no idea. The analysis around Carroll, I think there's going to be a lot of speculation about what happened this offseason. Was it the shoulder? Whatever happened, was it a mental thing? And nobody is going to have a clue what they're talking about. It's all going to be conjecture and speculation. So I have no idea what we owe this to, but he's a top 50 player and he's probably a first round pick again, if we're being honest.
Yep. No, I agree. He's going to creep back in there, or he's going to be a heck of a turn pick to pair up with someone in the first round when you're drafting. So it could be a fun one indeed. That'll do it, my friend. Another fun time chatting with you. Before we head out of here, why don't you plug everything you got going on? Let the listeners know where they can find you and what you got in mind for the offseason.
Well, it's you and I on leading off Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Going to be taking you through. We might see Welsh again a couple times. We'll see if he pops into those Monday shows. But a lot of the time, you're going to see Bubba and myself hosting the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, and live on the Fantasy Pros MLB YouTube channel. 12:30 Eastern on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I host my own show, the 90 Feet from Home Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I got stuff going on Patreon. In terms of the off season, going to take a little bit of a break once the regular season ends. The first couple weeks, there probably won't be a ton of content, but we'll still be doing podcasts. Going to get some early draft rankings up there, draft reviews, and then we're going to ramp right into it again because there's really no off season for us. We're going to be in a draft room probably before the postseason ends, and then we're going to get out to Arizona and do another draft. So it never really stops. The fun never stops around here. No fantasy football, no fantasy basketball or anything else, just baseball. So come follow along, Joe Orico 99, if you guys want to check out everything I got going on.
Yep, go check it out. It's a great follow. You probably already are following him, but if you're not, fix that and make sure you check out all his work and check us out 3 times a week, as you mentioned. And my friend, always a pleasure chatting with you. Thanks. And we'll do it again soon, I promise.
Yeah, we won't have to wait too long. If you guys are listening to this on the podcast feed, there's a good chance that either tomorrow or hell, if you're listening on Friday, go switch it over to Leading Off and check out more Joe and Bubba if you haven't got enough of us already.
Most definitely. Make sure, again, you guys follow him on Twitter at JoeArico99. I'm at BDIntric, and this was Benched with Bubba, episode 687. Catch you all next time.